Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Gunto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, March the 12th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We sort of do a weekend review program every Sunday. For those of you who may be checking with us for the first time, I know we have some new listeners, thanks to the Babaloo blog, who are featuring our program tonight. So what we try to do with Bill is talk about the week, talk about some of the stories of the week. Today we're going to be looking at this GOP and Obamacare situation. I think, by the way, my opinion on that is that I think the media is overstating the differences for a lot of reasons, but we'll get into that with Bill. There was a very good jobs report, a lot of excitement all of a sudden about the American economy. Bill likes to refer to it as the Trump bump, and I think there is some of that, seriously, some of that to talk about. The U.S. is sending troops to Syria, Marines, to Syria. That could be very interesting because I think President Trump may have to get a new resolution for that particular military operation. We'll talk about that. Russia and Trump. It seems like every week the Democrats are bringing that up, but I still haven't seen any evidence, and I'd love to see some evidence, or we need to talk about somebody else. There's also people asking President Trump for evidence about the wiretapping charges that he made. Apparently, it's going to go to Congress, as I understand. North Korea has become a bit of a headache for President Trump. It could very, very well be his first foreign policy crisis of any consequence. Howard Dean, who ran for president in 2004, made some very interesting remarks about pro-life Democrats. He basically says, I don't think they fit in our party. Well, if that's the case, they're going to have to explain that to a lot of Hispanic Democrats across the country who are very much pro-life. And I say we talk about Bill about many, many, many things, and today he's going to give us a weather report. How are you, Bill, from all the snow up in the Northeast?
Well, actually, it hasn't started yet. We expect a huge snowstorm beginning very late tomorrow night, and this will be accompanied by substantial global warming. We've been assured of that. You know, clearly that's the only explanation for this. But yes, we expect in the New York City area 12 to 18 inches of snow on Tuesday. And I should point out, I'm always cautious about weather forecasts because it's been my experience that in about 80% of the cases, the forecast overstates it for whatever reason. But this looks pretty real. I mean, this forecast has remained the same now for about 3 or 4 days. And it doesn't look as if there are going to be any last-minute changes. Of course, you know, you scurry around town and you see people buying batteries. Even for flashlights, they don't have. They just buy the batteries.
That's right.
The Red Cross gives you a list that says buy batteries. So people are buying batteries. And we'll sit it out. And, you know, if it is as big a snowstorm as is expected, it will really tie up the area for a couple of days. It really will. I mean, New York is very vulnerable to this kind of thing. Although the snow removal operations in the New York area are, as a general rule, quite good. So they should have that snow, at least at the side of the streets, fairly quickly.
Well, another good thing about New York is that when you have a storm like this, or a snowstorm like this, since most people move around by train, you don't have some of the traffic congestions, let's say you had in Chicago or other cities, where people still commute by car.
Yes.
So I think that's an advantage that you have there. That as long as you can get down to the subway, you'll be able to move around very easily. Well, we'll keep up with Urgent Agenda for your reports. I thought it was kind of funny because on this day in 1888, Bill, there was a huge New England storm. I mean, it basically shut down the entire New England region, including New York, I should say the Northeast region. But nobody blamed it on global warming in 1888. They just figured, that's what happens in winter.
Exactly. They blamed it on winter, but winter is now an obsolete concept. I think it's a word that probably soon will be abolished on college campuses as a word of oppression.
That's right.
You know, the winter is an oppressive word because it takes attention away from global warming.
Well, they'll keep it in the public schools because they used to say the Christmas party. Now they call it the winter party. So
that's
they'll
right.
keep it in the public schools in that respect. But one quick thing before we get started, there's a lot to talk about this week, but I just wanted to go back to 1933. President Roosevelt started his, radio programs. It became known as the Fireside Chats.
That's right.
And that was quite revolutionary in 1933, probably as revolutionary as President Trump tweeting, I would think. But that was really unique, and he was very good at it, Bill. I mean, FDR
was
the radio.
Yes, this was no president that had done this before. And, of course, radio was a relatively new medium. I mean, I think it was only in the mid-1920s that we had the first election coverage by a radio station, and that was a station in Pittsburgh. So in 1933, when FDR began these chats, they were unique for two reasons. One was the use of radio, but second was the fact that no president had ever spoken to the American people in such personal terms. He would begin the chats by saying, "My friends," which was very unusual. Presidents would be much more formal than that. And he would talk to them in very direct terms about their personal circumstances. It was one of the things that made FDR who he was. In his first Fireside Chat, he discussed banking. And he said, well, when you go into a bank, this is what you do, and this is what the result is. And people understood it. And this continued all through the Second World War. In fact, during the Second World War, he would get on and say, I would really like it if all of you got maps of Europe so that when we have our little chats like this, you can follow the action that I'm describing on the map. And the very next day, it was reported in New York City that the Hammond Maps had a retail store in New York, was completely sold out. I mean, you couldn't buy anything involving the war areas from Hammond because people had listened to the president. Well, the Fireside Chats became so successful. Doris Kearns Goodwin recalls this in her histories, that you could walk down a street in an American city and hear the president coming from one window. People often had radios near windows where the reception was good. And just follow down the street, and you go through to every window or past every window, and you could hear the whole chat because so many people tuned in. It was that unique.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing. There was generally one radio in the house. That's the other thing.
That's right.
There was generally one radio in the house, so the whole family would sit around, and people would be listening to one radio, which I think is fascinating. Well, let's get into some of the big stories of the week. As I said, there's a lot to get into. I wrote them down, so why don't we start with number one, GOP and Obamacare. Bill, I understand they're having some difficulties, and it's to be expected. I mean, it's a major piece of legislation, and people are expecting this thing to get fixed in 30 days, and it's not going to be. But I also think that the Democrats and the media – are overstating the differences. I think at the end of the day, they're going to find something they can all agree on because it's that important, Bill.
I hope so. I really do. There's so much bitterness in Washington, so much acrimony, not only between the two parties, but within the Republican Party. I mean, there are people within the Republican Party who do truly hate each other. And, of course, Trump himself is not particularly popular in the party. Remember, he's kind of a newcomer. And he's a man with a certain viciousness. He's made a lot of enemies within the Republican Party, especially during the last campaign. And there is a great fear that the initial bill that has been introduced by the Speaker of the House, Ryan, will somehow backfire, that even if it is passed, a lot of people will lose their insurance, which would be exactly what the anti-Trump media would be looking for. If the bill does pass and is signed into law, you can be sure the very first assignment at CNN will be, go find people who've lost their health care. And Paul Ryan said today that, yes, it is possible that a number of people could lose health care because of their own inactivity. In other words, that everybody will have the potential to be covered, but it is possible that because you have to do a bit more, I think, under the plan than under Obamacare, that some people just won't seek it. And that would be a tragedy.
But under Obamacare, and I hope that they explain this correctly to people, and I think they're going to try to, but under Obamacare, if nothing changes, Bill, the policies that people have right now, there's no guarantee they're going to be around in a year. Because
well,
a lot
right.
of insurance companies are pulling out. So this is really, the choice is being presented in a way that it's like, well, you have insurance now, you may not have it later. Those aren't really the choices. The choices are you're going to lose your insurance, and here's another plan that will cover you. That, to me, that's a more realistic choice, Bill.
It is. Now, I should point out, I am not an expert on health care, and I really don't understand and have not addressed the little details. You really do. It's a huge area, health care. It's a huge part of the economy, of course, critical to every family. I think that the new plan will give people more choices. It will also put more on them in terms of individual responsibility, which is something the Republican Party likes, but I'm not so sure the younger generation in America likes. Individual responsibility is a phrase we haven't heard too often in this country in the last 40 years. But it's going through the process. It's going through the legislative process. The Freedom Caucus, which is the really conservative Republicans in the House, have said that they will work with the president. That was a statement out today, relatively new statement, because they have been rather antagonistic to the Paul Ryan plan that has been introduced. I think we should know the whole story on this within 3 weeks. I don't think they're going to want it to drag out. And then I hope that once they get this finished with, passed or modified or whatever, that they go on as quickly as possible to tax reform. Because if a tax reform can result in a tax cut for the American people later this year, that will be all to the better.
That's right. Well, to me, what they ought to do is try to get whatever they can get through 51 votes in the Senate. Get that first.
Yes.
And then maybe come back after and work on what you have to get with 60 votes. But I think they can dismantle much of it with 51 votes in the Senate through the reconciliation.
Yes.
I that's what I understand.
That's what Ryan has been referring to, and he said there are certain things that probably cannot be done right now because we don't have 60 seats in the Senate.
Well, they're probably never going to have that until
that's
2019
problem,
anyway.
Yeah.
And
they're hoping for some Democratic support. I don't know if that will come, especially in the House. The Democratic Party today is so vociferously run from the political left that I think anybody who tries to cooperate with the administration will be designated as something of a political traitor, and a primary fight will be run against them in the 2018 midterms. So I think a lot of people are being intimidated into opposing any constructive work with the Republicans on a replacement for Obamacare.
Well, that may push a few of them into the Republican Party, Bill, meaning some of these senators like Manchin, he may decide that it's not worth it. Manchin probably has the best chance of any of these Democrats to survive.
Yes.
He's a very popular guy back home. But there's a lady up in one of the Dakotas, there's a fellow in
yes.
Montana, there's this lady in Missouri. They're really, rowing up the hill or uphill, as they say, or swimming
yes.
upstream or whatever the expression
upstream.
Is.
Yeah,
and they're in deep trouble. And,
they
and
are.
If they choose to oppose Trump, and Trump is, let's say, pretty popular in a year, that's going to hurt him. If I was a Democrat in one of these states, I would put my money on Trump, and I would try to work with him, figuring that that's my best chance to get reelected, though.
I think that's true, and I think, you know, what the Congressional Democratic Caucus needs is some type of understanding, a general understanding that it's perfectly okay to work for the president if you think it'll benefit your constituency. But there is a group called MoveOn.org, which you're familiar with, which is vociferous on the left, and they have made threats, and others have made threats, that if you dare to do anything with Trump, we will run a primary opponent against you. Or maybe even, I haven't heard this one actually mentioned, but I think it's possible they will also threaten people with third-party challenges. I mean, the sense of fear in the Democratic Party is absolutely palpable.
Well, they did that to Lieberman, if you remember, but he ended up winning as an independent. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if Manchin can get away with that in West Virginia, because he is a popular fellow there. But
yes,
he made this. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's the one. He's probably the safest of all of these Democrats. But there's a lot of them in deep trouble. And if they were asking my opinion, I would say, look, bet on your constituency, work with Trump, because that's what your people want, Bill.
That's exactly right. And I'm hoping some will actually do that. But in the current atmosphere of Washington, which is absolutely poisonous, I'm not so sure that rational action is going to prevail. I mean, as I mentioned, the intimidation within the Democratic Party is bizarre. I mean, it really is. It is really a syndrome at the present time. So I think all bets are off on this.
I think you're right. I mean, look what they tried to do to Sessions, and look what they're doing with these confirmations. I mean, it's absolutely insane. We're going to take a little break, Bill, and when we come back, we've got a lot to get into. We're going to talk a little bit about foreign policy. We'll talk about the economy and lots of other things with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's get back to our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, there was a pretty good jobs report that came out on Friday. I have to confess that I'm still a little bit, you know, not quite crazy yet in saying that we have a recovery on the way. But I do think that what you mentioned in at Urgent Agenda about the Trump factor, I do think there is a Trump factor. I think people do feel better about the future of the economy, Bill.
Yes, I call it the Trump effect. It's not original with me. And I think there is a Trump effect, and it began, and this is what I don't think has been stressed enough in press coverage, it began when he was elected. You know, people look at the jobs report for February, and they say, well, my God, how can you attribute that to Trump? He's only been in office a certain number of weeks, and that is absolutely correct, but he was elected some months ago. And as soon as he was elected, you saw a different attitude toward the economy begin to grow, especially in businesses, in corporations, in front offices where the hiring decisions are made. And I think that that's beginning to show up in the figures now. The jobs report was not only good in terms of the number of jobs created. That actually can be a very deceptive figure, because many jobs that go into that number are part-time jobs or very low-paying jobs. But what struck me about the jobs report that was just issued is that there was a substantial increase in manufacturing jobs and in construction jobs, which tend to be high-paying. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking not only for jobs to be created, but for good jobs to be created.
That's right. And there was another report that came out a bit before the jobs report. And this is done by Gallup, I think, every so many months or maybe every month. And they call it the Consumer Confidence Report. And that is also higher than it's been for a while. So I do think that people out there feel better about the guy driving the bus, if I could put it that way. I think they feel that Trump understands the economy much better than President Obama did. Particularly, I'm talking here about business people, you know, CEOs, business owners, small business owners. I think they feel better with President Trump than they did with President Obama. I really do, though.
Yes, well, I think, first of all, they know that they have a president who actually believes in the free enterprise system, and there was always substantial doubt about Obama's beliefs in that direction, given his history and the history of his wing of the Democratic Party. And I, excuse me, and I also think that he knows how to build a story, Trump does, whether one likes him or not. And, you know, as I've said in the past, my feelings had been mixed. But he knows how to build the story, and that you hear one day of one company that's pledging a certain number of jobs, and the next day the White House will talk about another company or another series of companies. And I think that there is a snowball effect that we're beginning to see. I hope it lasts. I hope it can keep it going. I think it would be very helpful down the line. I think I mentioned this in the first segment, if we had a tax cut, which will only stimulate the economy more and stimulate it in the right way, in that the money goes right back to the actual people who earned it. And I think if he can do that and keep an eye on growth, produce real growth in the economy, I think that Trump could emerge as a very, very important president.
Well, you mentioned in your blog post, you mentioned that he could be substantial, like Henry Kissinger had
said.
That was
the term he used.
And I think this is the key, the jobs and the economy. If people, let's say 6 months from now, 9 months from now, let's say at the end of 2017, feel like they do now, I think all this other stuff, all the other noise will pretty much be worthless, meaningless. But to me, this is it. And I hope he understands how important this jobs and economy. I think he does. I really do.
Yes.
Because I think this is it. This is why people voted for him. I really believe that.
Well, that's it. And that was one of Reagan's great strengths, and that is he understood why people voted for him. There was a famous story told by Peggy Noonan, of course, was a speechwriter. And she was at his desk with Reagan going over a speech. And I believe I have the story correct, that it was the State Department that wanted certain lines taken out, and Reagan put them right back in, and he said, "Peggy, that's why we were elected." He understood what people expected of him. I hope Trump understands that, and he doesn't give the impression after a few months that he's just forgetting the people who voted for him. That would be catastrophic, because they took a chance on him, and it was a big chance. But I think he has the common sense to remember exactly why he was elected.
Well, certainly judging by the way the opposition is reacting, I think they know that too, because I've never seen, you know, like you mentioned in the previous segment, the Democrat Party is just nothing but a hysterical bunch.
Yes.
And the media is no better, Bill. And this week, there was a fascinating column by Nate Silver talking. He's done, I guess, 8 or 9 of these columns going back to 2016, sort of wondering why they got it wrong. And he talked about this liberal media bubble, where this media is operating in. And I thought he hit it out of the park, Bill. That's exactly what the problem is. They're basically talking to each other. They don't know anybody who thinks differently than they do. So they have a lot of diversity. I mean, they have diversity in the sense that they have gender diversity and they have racial diversity, but they don't really have any mental diversity. I mean, they don't really have any ideological diversity, as Nate Silver wrote, Bill.
Well, yes, and it recalls the very famous story of the movie critic Pauline Kael, who in 1972, after the 72 election, which Nixon won in a landslide, and she said, "I don't know how Nixon won. I don't know anybody who voted for him." And that is really a very much a press mentality. It's also a mentality you find among college professors, you know, who talk to each other and to 20-year-olds. Not a good combination. But they are people who live in a bubble, and the only people they know are people who think the way they do. And one of the reasons that's true is they don't seek out anybody who disagrees with them. I've had this happen many times, you know, and And you hear this story repeatedly, especially from conservatives, that when people find out they're conservative, they kind of shy away from them. At one time, this kind of wasn't true. People knew people who they disagreed with. They had polite disagreements. But now you have this virtual isolation, and I think Nate Silver is correct.
Well, I think so, and I just hope the media listens to him because, you know, a couple of years ago, he was the one they were always talking about. I mean, he was their favorite pollster, and
yes,
he got it wrong like everybody else. So I hope they listen to him because in this latest analysis that he wrote, I thought he nailed it. I really think he explained exactly what is wrong with the media. They're I can just imagine these people sitting around in a newsroom, and nobody really, I bet nobody in most of these newsrooms even voted for Trump. But I'll give
I'll give you something
that I remember from the election, Bill, which it always, you know, impacted me. You would watch these Trump rallies, and there was excitement. There was people. I mean, he had one here in Dallas, and people couldn't get in. That's how popular it was.
Yes.
People literally couldn't get in. They had to send people home. The fire department said, "We can't let anybody else in." Okay, then you would watch the Clinton rallies. They couldn't pay people to show up. Now,
that's right.
I'm not saying that's a perfect barometer of where the election is, but it's got to mean something when there's so much excitement on one side and there isn't on the other. Frankly, that's the way it was in 2008 when all the excitement was with President Obama or then Senator Obama, and unfortunately very little of it was Senator McCain, Bill.
Yes, there is a magic about Trump, despite all his negatives, and he has them, believe me. They are willing to put the negatives aside because they believe that his message, which was kind of a new message, was the one that they wanted to hear, and that is that I remember you, I know who you are, I know how hard you work, and I know that you've been forgotten. And that is a very powerful message for people who honestly feel that way. I know that there have been all kinds of innuendos, smear lines that his message was really a subliminal message only to white people. I don't think that's true at all. I don't think that Trump has the sensitivity yet that he needs as president to talk to people of different groups. But I think he wants to be inclusive of all America. But what he did that was so phenomenal is he said what other people were thinking about their condition, about voters, not simply voters, but citizens being ignored, about people within the Democratic Party feeling ignored, and it had its effect, and I think it's having its effect now. His approval rating is still not high. I mean, I think there are some polls that even show him underwater, a few show him slightly ahead, and the reason for that is that the Democratic Party has become so fanatical that there is almost no support for Trump in the Democratic Party. And that is actually quite rare. There usually is in the opposition party some support for an incumbent president, at least up to the point of goodwill. And I see none of that here.
Well, at least there is support in the sense of working with the new president. It's like when President Obama was elected, I wasn't happy. But, you know, I felt that, well, let's get something done. Let's work with the guy and see what we can get done. Because I want stuff done for me too, not just the people who voted for Obama. And that's what I find most troubling, as you mentioned before in the other segment, that many Democrats don't really care about their constituencies. They're going to oppose Trump no matter what he says or what he does. And to me, that's just plain irresponsible, Bill. I mean, that's just totally, completely irresponsible to be that much opposed to a president. It's almost irrational, Bill. That's how I look at any Democrat who believes that, Bill.
It is irrational, and it reflects the level of intimidation within the Democratic Party. I mean, we have gone through periods like this in American history, but I think that the era that this most resembles, really, is the McCarthy era. I mean, you have real intimidation in this country right now. You certainly have it on college campuses. It's becoming a national scandal to see the level of intimidation on college campuses. I'm sure you find it in the press. You know, one of the things that people really don't talk about enough when they deal with the press is the subject of careerism. People in the press are no different than people in any other corporate setting. They want to be promoted, and they want to be paid more. And you're not going to get promoted in most news organizations today by being pro-Trump.
No, not at all. Well, one of the big decisions that President Trump has apparently made or is in the process of making is sending Marines to Syria. And I'm not necessarily opposed to that, Bill. I'm not opposed to a reentering of the Middle East because I think we retreated too much under President Obama. But I would like to have the president go to the Congress and define the mission, or at least go to the Congress and say, we're going to declare war on ISIS, period.
Yes.
And have a declaration. So because I'm concerned about starting wars with resolutions that go back to 2002 or 2001, Bill.
Yes. Well, I kind of agree with you. And one of the most interesting aspects of that is the fact that we don't hear at all from the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of State. You know, even the New York Times pointed out, oh, they are so vociferously anti-Trump that I don't know if I can take any of it seriously. But the Times pointed out that Rex Tillerson, isn't heard from at all. And he is the Secretary of State, which is generally considered to be the most senior position in the cabinet. It's absolutely fascinating that he is so silent. Now, the cabinet secretary who was looked to most for wise advice on military affairs, James Mattis, also is silent. I don't think he's held a press conference. I don't think we've heard from him. We have not heard from the National Security Advisor, General McMaster. So we are going into this without any real public explanation. And I've always felt that what was lacking in the Bush administration in the Middle East was really good public explanations. And I think that same mistake is being made again.
Well, I think you're right. I think he needs to explain, because this is also something he ran against. I mean, this is, you know, remember, he was not going to get us involved in these missions. He was going
correct.
To be very, and but now he's talking about sending Marines. And as I said, I'm not opposed to it, because I do feel that in some instances we retreated too much and too quickly. But it seems to me that if you're going to put American troops on the ground, especially in a place like Syria, which is as confusing as it can be,
it's a hellhole.
I think you better explain
it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder what exactly is their mission going to be. Who are they going to be fighting with, and you know what side are they on? Because Syria is a mess, and we can blame Obama for that, but that's over. I mean, it's now Trump who has the problem.
Trump, I hope
he explains.
Yes,
we're
dealing with a situation where not only does he have the problem, but he also knows that he will automatically be blamed for anything that goes wrong, whereas he will be given no credit for anything that goes right.
That's right. We'll be reminded of the great statesman, Obama. Every time something goes wrong, we'll be reminded of the great statesman, Obama,
You know, it's interesting because so little attention has been given to the fact in the Trump era, which is an unusual era. I mean, he's an unusual president, may not work out, we don't know yet, but so little attention has been given to the fact that never before in our modern political history have we had a former president set up shop within walking distance of the White House and set up what amounts to be a political operation. I mean, Valerie Jarrett is moving in with the Obamas. It's almost a sitcom, you know? You could do something like Happy Days or Unhappy
That's
Days,
right.
You know?
That's right.
Oh, here are the unhappy days. And
right.
And they're going to run a political operation. This is something that Americans, I think, really frown on. They believe we have one president at a time. When you leave office, you leave. I think the pattern was set by Harry Truman, who went back home to Missouri. As he said, put his suitcases in the attic, and that was it. But this man seems to be Obama, Jimmy Carter on steroids. At least Jimmy Carter left town. He didn't leave the headlines or the newspapers because he went around negotiating with other countries and, you know, saying, hi, I'm Jimmy Carter, and won a Nobel Peace Prize for what, I don't know. But he did. And this is an even larger presence than Jimmy Carter, and I don't know if it will go down well with the American people.
Well, I think it was an urgent agenda, or maybe somewhere else that I read that the American people aren't crazy about this, of having President Obama, you know, intervening with President Trump. That I think most people, like you said, kind of like to go one president at a time. You had your term. Well, that's it. You had your 8 years. We took care of you. We gave you a plane, everything else. Now it's time to retire. But part of the problem, I think, is ego. And in the case, I mean, I can think of President Bush, 41 and 43. I think both of them were willing to say, okay, it's over. I'm going home. And especially for 41, it was pretty painful because
that
was a tough loss for him. I mean, I think, you know, that was a tough loss, but, you know, but they went home and they started their own lives and, you know, they didn't intervene again. Clinton,
that,
to some extent, did that too.
Yes.
Well, Clinton did too, but he got into the foundation and that was something else.
Yes,
but
at least he worked through a foundation and he did not come to Washington and have a house. Now, his wife, actually, they did have a house in Washington because his wife had become a senator. She was senator from New York, so in a way there was a kind of excuse for that. But I don't think that house was used inappropriately. I mean, I don't think Bill Clinton was there most of the time, and when he was there, he didn't make grand presidential pronouncements. I think we're going to see a great deal of Barack Obama and a great deal more than the American people want to see.
I think so, because I think he's desperately trying to save his legacy, which, as far as I can tell, is Obamacare and the Iran deal. And, well, I don't know what's going to happen with the Iran deal, but I do think Obamacare is coming undone. Now, speaking of President Trump, there continues to be a lot of allegations, a lot of speeches, a lot of statements, a lot of interviews about his relationship with Russia. But, Bill, I haven't really seen any evidence of it other than lots and lots of allegations. I mean, at some point you would think that they stopped talking about it, Bill.
Well, you know, that has been brought up. And people say on the Republican side, where is the evidence that there was anything inappropriate? There are also some people on the Republican side who, as I mentioned before, don't like Trump and are kind of using the investigations to needle him, especially John McCain. I can understand McCain's resentment. Here is a man who was a Republican presidential candidate, a man who had given years of service to his country and was turned down in favor of Barack Obama. And here's Donald Trump, who, to be perfectly blunt about it, is a lesser man as a man, and he gets to be president after having said ugly things about John McCain. So I understand McCain's position. I still think it might be wise for McCain to tone it down a little bit, even though he may very well be right in what he is saying. We want the evidence. We want the evidence that there was a Russian inappropriate collusion with Russians by the Trump campaign. I don't think that evidence will ever turn up because I don't think it's there. We also want the evidence that President Obama ordered a wiretap of either Donald Trump or of his operation. And I think it is perfectly proper for Democrats and the president and others to demand that evidence. After all, President Trump made a very serious charge. And a charge like that against a former president really is extraordinarily serious, and he really has to present some evidence. It may not have to be evidence that Obama directly ordered wiretapping, but if there is evidence out there that his organization and that he were wiretapped, that is very serious stuff, and it has to come out.
Well, and some people have said there was a reporter who used to be with the Washington Times. I think her last name is Carter. She was working with another reporter who used to be with AP, and they were saying that they have found that there was a FISA request in October of 2016. And apparently there was something like that. And if that's true, I mean, that's a scandal, because that's in the middle of a campaign. And unless I mean, unless they really had evidence, it smacks of politics to me, Bill.
Yes, it does. Now, from what I understand of the Pfizer request that was made in September of 2016, it dealt with a request to record foreign individuals who may be involved in nefarious activities. In other words, the way it's being reported, it wasn't a direct request to bug Trump or his people, but to bug the people that they were assumed to be speaking with. And so that made the Pfizer request, legal. But again, if there was anything really there that indicted Trump, it certainly hasn't been presented.
No, I mean, and that's the whole point of this thing. I mean, it's just allegations that I think work real well for fundraising purposes among the Democrats. I mean, that's all they talk about when they get together. Every Democrat that you see on television on any of these shows brings it up. And
oh, yeah.
when they ask them for evidence, they go, well, we don't have it yet, but we're investigating. Well, you're investigating how long is this going to go on? Bill,
oh, they
want
to
talk about...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, they want it to go on for 4 years. You know, they want this to be the endless investigation. And they have dreams, the Democrats do, of making this Trump's Watergate. But I don't think those dreams are going to come true.
Well, as I always remind my Democrat friends, Bill, that if you don't have the majority in the House, it's pretty tough to impeach a president.
Yes.
There
would have to be overwhelming evidence to impeach. And remember, impeachment simply means to accuse. The Senate would try a president who has been impeached, and there has never been a case in American history where the Senate has decided to remove a president.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, Andrew Johnson came within a vote, and Bill Clinton actually didn't have any serious threat that he would be removed. I want to talk a little bit about North Korea, Bill, because that all of a sudden is almost front page everywhere you look. And for a while there, I thought it was your typical North Korean story. But now I'm beginning to think that there may be a chance of a confrontation with North Korea. It's gotten so bad that either North Korea is going to make a stupid mistake or we're going to decide to preempt them. I feel differently about North Korea than I've had for years, Bill. I feel as if a confrontation is coming, and this could be the first test of the first real foreign policy crisis for President Trump, Bill.
It could be, and remember that all of our attempts, or so-called attempts, to restrain North Korea have been in vain. We did have agreements with them on their nuclear program, I believe on their missile program, and none of those agreements have really been kept. And yet they do not face anything serious enough to deter them from doing it again. I mean, there are some sanctions on North Korea, but clearly they're not having much of an effect. They continue to test their missiles. They continue to make belligerent comments. They continue, apparently, at least from what is being reported, to develop their nuclear program. So, in a way, they kind of have it all, and not much was ever done during the Obama administration to stop them. This is a new administration, much more dedicated to national defense, and it is possible there could be a flash that develops into something on the Korean Peninsula that could be very tragic.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's gotten so crazy lately. With these missiles that they're firing and everything else, that you're beginning to think, what can we do? The other point that I wanted to make about North Korea, Bill, for years we've been hearing that China can fix it. I'm not sure that's true, because China, I mean, I'm sure every president going back to whoever has tried to do something with China regarding North Korea, and we always seem to run into a dead end. So maybe President Trump can do something different, but I'm not really inspired or not really optimistic that China is going to do anything about it, though.
That's, I think you're quite correct. And not only that, but we have an additional problem. That is that the president of South Korea, a woman, has been removed from office. for corruption in South Korea, and she was one of America's best friends anywhere in the world. And we don't know at this point who's going to replace her. I assume it will be someone who favors the American-Korean alliance, but not necessarily with the same enthusiasm as the outgoing Korean president. So we have some instability, and we also have an effect on Japan, which really has not gotten enough attention, and that is there is a growing body of belief in Japan that Japan must have a larger national defense. And, you know, that always kind of scares us, because at what point do they become, simply by sheer force of will, a world power again?
Well, you wrote about this last week, I think it
yes.
was, and yes, I'm concerned about that as well. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about the Democrats and look ahead at next week.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
One of the best shows in Dallas with my good friend Carlos Quedes, and of course we've been playing Carlos' music on the show for the last, almost the last couple of years. He has a brand new CD, and we get to play some of the music. So I hope that you get out there and have dinner and listen to the music with Carlos. Bill, looking at another issue that was very interesting this week, and maybe because I'm in Texas, this is more even more interesting. You may remember in the 2014 campaign when Wendy Davis had a lot of problems with pro-life Democrat women. Because that is one area. The pro-life is one area where a lot of Hispanics are very much in or very much in disagreement with the Democrat Party. And Howard Dean was being interviewed this week, and I'm stating pretty much what he said. I'm paraphrasing sort of what he said, but he was asked about pro-life Democrats whether they fit in the party, and he said, "Well, not really, because." A lot of the young people who are Democrats, he said no, Bill. And I'm wondering how stupid is that of Howard Dean to potentially risk a significant voting block like Hispanics, but in general, half of the country is pro-life, Bill.
Oh, yes, and even those who are pro-choice, a large number of them believe in being pro-choice but with restrictions. And I think Dean's comments were absolutely reckless and pathetic. You don't want to drive people away from your party. You want to attract people to your party. And right now, the Democrats don't have much of a message. I mean, what are they going to say? They tried it all in the past. It did not work. I mean, they're down 1,000 legislative seats in the country overall. And comments of that type are indicative of why the Democratic Party is where it is, which is basically a coastal party, a party run by elites, a party that really does not like its own traditional constituencies. And I think Dean just added to the problem.
Yeah. You know, it seems to me that if he had said something like, well, I'm pro-choice, but we respect people who are pro-life and we want them to be Democrats because we have other things in common
That's right.
with them, that would make a lot more sense to me, Bill. But what he said, it was just absolutely ridiculous. I do have one before we get to next week, I do have one story that you wrote, you put on your blog about ghost ships. And I was fascinated by that, Bill. If you could take a minute and tell the audience what you were talking about. I thought it was great.
Yes, actually there were several stories this week that use that term, which one are you referring to? Are you referring to the ships off the coast of Europe?
Well, that's the one that I found most interesting.
Yes,
about the potential terrorism angle, I guess. That's
yes,
what attracted
yes.
my attention.
And they're called ghost ships because there are a certain number of ships that have turned up in recent months, mostly originating in their journeys from Libya, who appear off the coast of Europe and then turn off their GPS, which means it is hard to track them. ships today are equipped with GPS, as are planes and cars, and they just turn them off. And this has raised great concern in European anti-terror circles because ships are superb platforms from which to launch terror attacks. There's always been concern that a ship could be used, especially if it's been hijacked or taken over by bad elements. It can be used as a missile platform, with missiles fired directly from a ship into, for example, an American harbor. Ships can also infiltrate people through boats launched from the ships to the shore and infiltrate saboteurs into this country or other countries, as did in fact happen in World War II when some saboteurs were landed on Long Island from a German submarine that was offshore. Ships are just terrific, I shouldn't use the word in such a positive way, but frightful terror weapons. For example, a ship simply because of its size can be sailed into, say, Baltimore Harbor. And if it has on board a load of explosives and a crew that is a partial suicide crew, and those explosives are set off in the harbor, enormous harm could be done. Enormous. So when these ghost ships started appearing and then disappearing off the coast of Europe, and especially since their origin was Libya, there was and is great concern.
Right. One of the reasons why we need a very large navy so that we can keep track of these kinds of ships, Bill, because you're exactly right. They could show up in the harbor and be quite damaging. Well, let's take a look at next week, Bill. There's a lot of stuff next week. I understand President Trump is going to be campaigning for Obamacare. That apparently will be a big issue next week. Anything else that you'll be keeping track of?
Well, yes, the Obamacare campaigning is very important, but even more important than that is the bill itself. And I am depending on this on experts whom I read and whom I trust. And the big complaint is it really does not solve that many problems and may create some new ones, that it is not the repeal and replace that the Republican Party had promised. Now, Paul Ryan says there's a reason for that, and that is there are certain elements of Obamacare for procedural reasons that cannot be immediately dropped from the political spectrum. They better get it right. They get one chance to get it right. It is one of the cornerstone Republican issues, and if it turns out that they pass a bill that drives people off health insurance and doesn't make it any less expensive for the others, it will be a tremendous blow to the Republican Party. On the other hand, if they get it right, it will be a tremendous asset. So that is certainly one story we're going to be covering. Also, we're going to be covering the fact that the various and appropriate committees of Congress are going to be investigating the contacts or the alleged contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia during the 26th campaign. They will also be investigating the charges by President Obama that by President Trump, that the Obama administration wiretapped him. And so it should be a week of possible fireworks. And then the other things that have to be looked at is the conduct of our foreign policy and this very substantial mystery that is developing in Washington as to why President Trump is not filling many seats and offices in his government that are normally filled by now. And I think what we may be in for is a surprise, and that is he may turn to the American people and say, we're not filling them because we don't want to fill them. Let's see how well we can do with a smaller government. And that may meet with great approval. So we don't know, but there are an awful lot of high-ranking positions that have been left vacant.
Now, like what, for example? Can you name one? I mean, not a cabinet position. You mean
well,
sub-cabinet
positions. These are sub-cabinet positions. These would be the deputy secretary.
Right.
For example, the deputy secretary of defense for policy is open. That's the fourth-ranking member of the Defense Department. And there is great controversy over who Mattis wants for the position. The controversy is appropriate because it's Ann Patterson, who made a wreck of things during the Obama administration. Why he wants her, nobody knows. There are a number of positions apparently at the State Department, the Assistant Secretary level, the expertise level, where the Secretary of State would depend on these people for advice, for particular knowledge. But it is possible that there are conflicts with the White House over who will get these jobs. It is also possible that Trump can say, eliminate most of them. So we don't know at this stage. There isn't that much coming out of the administration in terms of information on these things.
Well, that's interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on Urgent Agenda and have you tell us what is going on, as well as the weather, Bill. You got to let us tell us about the big snowstorm, whether it comes or not. We're going to keep an eye on you for to be our weather report for the Northeast. How's that, Bill?
I look forward to it. I will, of course, have to take the global warming pledge and appear in a snowstorm in a bikini just to show that it really is very hot out there. But yes, we are expecting a big one on Tuesday, but we've gone through this ritual before. Let's see what actually happens.
Yeah, I think it was last year. If you remember last year, there was a big storm that was going to happen. It didn't happen. Remember that?
Something like that,
I think we went through last year. So, well, I hope whatever happens, I hope it's the best for all of you. We wish you all the best. That's what I mean. And we'll, as long as it doesn't turn off Urgent Agenda, I won't mind the snow.
Well, thank you. That's very, very, very kind of you. We will keep going, even by candlelight.
That's it. You'll keep us posted by candlelight. You'll be like Abraham Lincoln reading a book in candlelight, Bill.
That's right. Exactly. And, you know, it doesn't take much power for the president, because he only has 140 words per tweet, or 144 words. So he just tweets it out and that's it. So
that's right. Well, if I see you tweeting, then I'll figure out that he's persuaded you to tweet.
Right. Some chance.
That's right. Well, Bill, as always, thank you. Good night, and thank you, and we'll talk to you the next time. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Looking forward to next week.
All right. Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Well, that's going to do it, folks. If you're in the Northeast, I hope that you're ready for the snow whenever it comes. Here in Dallas, we actually have some pretty nice weather today. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.